Hello, everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, November 16th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale, the largest supplier of naturally derived cosmetics bases in the world. Extended shipping credit promotion ends November 30th. Earn money towards shipping of future purchases each time you buy. Visit www.essentialwholesale.com today for details. If you're joining us from indiebusinessradio.com, I invite you to click the chat link so you can join us here at the chat where you can chat live with us. I like to use Twitter, but you can use Facebook if you'd like. Visit my Twitter page at indiebusiness to get the chat link too. Well, it seems like these days everyone is hanging out a shingle of some kind. In particular, since so many companies are cutting back on mid-level professional staff, many people are finding their way to the world of professional services consulting as they make their transition from a full-time employee to self-employed professional. But as easy and fun as it may sound to start your own business, our guest today says that a lot of people can learn from him how to do it just right. His name is Michael McLaughlin, and he's the author of Winning the Professional Services Sale: Unconventional Strategies to Reach More Clients, Land Profitable Work, and Maintain Your Sanity. Michael joins us from his offices in Portland, Oregon. Michael, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Well, thanks for having me.
Michael is a management consultant and speaker with more than 20 years in the professional services industry. He's the founder and principal of Mindshare Consulting, which helps professional services organizations design winning approaches for sales, marketing, and service delivery. And we all can't get enough of that, Michael. So have you noticed in your work in this area, Michael, that there is an increase in the number of people that are starting professional services businesses?
Well, you know, there certainly are a lot of people. I mean, the numbers are pretty hard to get your arms around because there are so many people in services types of businesses. And so it's kind of hard to say whether, you know, how much it's growing, but it certainly feels like it is. As a lot of people look at what's happening out in the world, and some people are struggling in corporate jobs and they want to go someplace else, or some people just want to be entrepreneurs. They want to take their expertise, they want to take the things they know and bring it to the market. And there are just terrific opportunities to do that today, and lots of people are taking advantage of it, and it's no, you know, it's no wonder why. It's just so much easier to get yourself into the market today than it has been in the past. Some of the barriers to entry have dropped a bit, and so people are taking advantage of those opportunities, and I can't blame them for doing it.
Well, Michael, what are some of the good reasons for getting into a kind of professional services consulting these days?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about professional services is that you really are, especially if you're in a small business or entrepreneur or individual practitioner, you know, you really are bringing yourself to the market. You're bringing, you know, and I don't like to say your brand, but that's really what you're doing. You're bringing your expertise, your perspective, your motivation, your energy, the things that you do the best and that you're the most passionate about to the people who you want to serve. And that's what makes it so attractive to people, because for so many people, it gives them an opportunity to do the things they really want to do rather than the things they feel like they have to do to make a living. And being in a services business allows you to do that. Now, the services business, just by way of definition, can be pretty broad because, you know, you and I probably know lots of people and lots of companies, small and large, that sell products and offer services. So, you know, we're talking mostly about kind of pure services businesses, but there are lots of product companies that have a big service component to what they do. And they also, you know, are doing the same type of thing. They're bringing the things to the market that they really, really are excited and interested in doing.
Well, and you know, Michael, what I have discovered, and I'd like your comment on this, is that people who have been offering products for a significant period of time, by default, they develop an obvious expertise in how to bring those products to market. So I'm noticing that a lot of them are starting consulting businesses to help companies that really are, in some ways, their competitors, st- start competing businesses so they can be successful as well.
Well, and that is just a perfect extension or a perfect way to enter into a services market, by taking something that you are already really good at, that you have some leading thinking about and that you have strong expertise, and bringing it to the market. It's perfect, and it's a very natural extension of people who are either running their own product businesses today, but it's also, some people who are in, other jobs, whether they're in the corporate world, education, the government, healthcare, whatever, to take that expertise and bring it into the market.
So, Michael, if the competition is getting stiffer, on a micro scale for all these individual businesses, I'm thinking that must be good for people who are looking for consultants.
Well, I think it can be. It's kind of a two-edged sword, though, because if it's true, and I believe it is, that there are many more choices, and even if there aren't more choices, there is lots more information about the choices that are out there. Buyers of services are literally swamped with information about every choice they have, so it makes the market look more competitive. But the reality is, even if there is lots of information, lots of competitors, the ones who are the leaders, the ones who are really making a mark in the market, who are leading with their ideas and have the expertise, float to the top of every client's buying list. And it's not that difficult for them to kind of square away the good from the bad. And I would suggest that that there's kind of an 80-20 rule, for lack of a better way to talk about it, that 20% of the people out there are probably bringing in 80% of the business because they are the best.
Right. Very, very good point. And so if you're deciding, or you're in the process, Michael, of starting a consulting business, and may I say, too, that a lot of times the questions come out of the blue for some people. All of a sudden they start getting emails or phone calls from people saying, well, it looks like you're pretty good at this, and I read about you in a couple of magazines. You're really good at the products that you're selling. Do you offer services, or what resources can you share with me to be successful?
Sure.
I've been seeing a lot of that. So what are the things that companies who are thinking about moving in that direction, what are the things that they need to know that are not obvious on the surface? Like, it's so easy to say, I'm good at this, here's my hourly rate, or I'll think of one for you and start helping you out. But what are some of the things they really need to consider if they really want to make a consistent business out of this that can grow and expand into the future?
Well, it's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked it. It's a big question. I think that if I were to try to answer it in as simple a way as I can, the most important thing, I think, is to be absolutely sure that you're not doing work or pursuing work that you can't do,
okay,
or that you don't want to do. Part of the problems that some people get into when they're in a services business is actually running after or pursuing work that they either can't really do very well or don't want to do but feel like they should. It's not necessarily about just targeting a market, but it's about looking at what it is you're being asked to do or what it is you're thinking about doing, and being absolutely certain that you want to do that kind of work, and B, you can do it should somebody ask you to do it. Now, there are many other kind of fundamentals about marketing and getting your visibility built into the market that you want to work in. But without having those two things, the real desire and, ambition to do it, and the ability, all the marketing that you do won't really help you.
So let's look at what to do before we've spent all this time and money marketing. Do we we've seen some other people maybe do some things that we want to do, and we think we'd probably be pretty good at it. I mean, are you seeing some people start without being sure of that? How can that happen?
Well, there are some people who will, you know, who will say, I can do, you know, X service. But maybe as they get into a process with a potential client to define that service and act and to define exactly what they'll do, sometimes it's not exactly as it started out. That is, it changes into something different, or maybe you find out that what you thought the client wanted wasn't really what they needed. And so sometimes these things change as you get into the process with a client, and they can evolve into something that you might not be the right person to do. But some people who are in the services business will continue to press forward even though they know they're not really the right person. But they'll try to do the work anyway, and it makes them crazy because it ends up taking them longer than they thought. They don't make money, and they don't deliver the value that the client wanted. So it's possible. So that's how it tends to happen, almost by accident. And,
yeah.
and you just have to be, careful as you proceed. Now, one of the things that I would say, and I, you know, this book that I wrote about selling is the second book I've written. I wrote a book with Jay Levinson called Guerrilla Marketing for mm-hmm. Consultants. And just the reason I bring that up is because, you know, you talked about if you don't really have the money to or the budget to be into the market. And, you know, what we've suggested in that book and I have written about is most of the marketing that professionals will do doesn't have to be based on budget and a lot of money, but more on your ability to make time and to be, you know, to have the energy to do marketing and then to be creative in how you get into the market. And those three things are usually more important to the success of marketing than money. And they'll be more effective than money.
Again, you said time, creativity, and what?
And energy. Your energy to get out into the market and stay there and do the things that your clients want to see done so that you can draw them to you. And what we found when Jay and I wrote this book, and I think, you know, Jay Levinson has suggested this for a long time, that, you know, that's really the key to marketing is, you know, time, effort, and energy, or time, creativity, and energy,
mm-hmm.
Not money.
So we're starting this business. I mean, and I like what you said earlier about it sort of happening by accident, that we discover that we've hit the nail on the head or not. So do you suggest that for people who are just starting out that we use that process to, not try and, bite off too much more than we can chew on the beginning? Because it sounds like what you're saying, Michael, is that part of the ability to know exactly what your niche is doing it a couple of times at first, testing out the water, so you can actually sort of discover that in a practical way?
Because, excuse me, there are a couple of important skills that a person needs to have to be able to deliver a service effectively to clients. You know, we may know exactly what it is we've done to create success for our business, and then be asked to do something for somebody else that sort of mimics what we've done or leverages our expertise.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you know, and when you hear that, it's easy to say, sure, I can do that. I've done it before. But when you try to take your expertise and bring it to somebody else in a different environment with different people, potentially even, you know, slightly different business models, you need an effective way to bring that expertise across to that person. It's not just like doing it for yourself. And so there are some fundamental skills that you want to build in terms of how to deliver a service, and those take a little bit of time to develop. And that's why it's good to start with something that you're sure you can absolutely do, no question about it, mm-hmm. and then begin to develop those skills, you know, in terms of how to make sure that you're defining exactly what needs to be done for the person, how long it's going to take, what you're going to do, and how you'll measure the result, so that when you get done, you've got a happy client, which is really what you're trying to accomplish. And that takes a little bit of time.
Situation for everyone. We're talking with, we're talking with Michael McLaughlin, the author of Winning the Professional Services Sale. And when we come back, we're going to pick Michael's brain about what some of those special skills that are required are. So don't touch that mouse. We're going to come back and talk with Michael more about the skills you need to market your professional services well and to deliver exceptionally well. This is Donna Maria, Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here today with Michael McLaughlin, author of Winning the Professional Services Sale. And before we took our break, Michael was sharing with us a couple of really important things we need to do in order to be successful at selling ourselves as professional services providers. We need to be creative. We need to have a lot of energy. And those are really good things. And Michael also says that there are some skill sets that we need to develop in order to market ourselves effectively. Michael, share some of those.
Well, to get out into the market as a service provider of any kind, for lack of a better way to say this, you have to have something to say and someone to say it to. And I mean, all of the marketing of services really boils down to that. Do you have something to say and someone to say it to, or someone who will listen to you? So finding ways to get out into the market with your message, with your perspective, with your ideas is what makes the difference between somebody who's successful in the market and somebody who is not. And you have so many different ways to bring your ideas to market today that that the barriers to entry are fairly low. So what happens is the people who have the best ideas are the ones who win. And that means if you're starting a business and you have a perspective on how your potential clients should operate, how they could operate, maybe what their future is going to look like, if you have perspectives about how things ought to be done, those are the issues that your prospective clients want to hear about, and that's where you get creative. You know, if you ask yourself, what would my clients or prospective clients think is going to happen in the future? Can I answer that question for them? And by the way, that's a very powerful question to answer for people, because they all want to know what's coming next. And so if you can create a set of ideas that you can either publish, whether you're blogging or tweeting or both, or you have a newsletter, or however you want to bring those ideas to the market, if you can get compelling ideas, and they don't have to be the only time they've been said. You know, some people think you've got to be all the time different than everybody else, and that's just not true. You just might have to say things with a little different slant than somebody has said them before. And if you can do that and bring your creativity to that kind of work, people will be drawn to you.
So this is really good. So what you're saying is that if you believe you have the expertise and you can target a particular market, then what's up to you is to make sure that they know who you are and that you reach them with something that's different from what everybody else is doing at its core.
Well, you know, there's going to, if you look at, I agree with you, but if you look at what consultants do or anyone who's doing professional services, you know, they're all going to look the same. I mean, no matter what business you try to enter, there's probably going to be somebody else there doing it already. I mean, we just know that.
You make yourself stand out.
Well, you know, you stand out based on the power of your ideas. So, you know, maybe you do something that 15 other people do. I will almost guarantee you that if you're doing something that 15 other people are going to do, 14 out of those 15 people, or maybe, you know, 10 out of those 15 people are going to look exactly the same. You're exactly right. They're going to say the same thing. They're going to offer the exact same thing.
Okay.
And, you know, their websites will look the same and things will be very much the same. But if you can find just a different way to think about the same issues, you will not look the same. You don't have to bring something to the market that's completely different than everybody else, but you might talk about it in a different way. You might have a different perspective. And I mean, usually the reason that there are 15 people out in the market doing the same thing is because there is a market need. But the way you approach your market in terms of the power and strength of your ideas will make, that's what will catch people's attention and will make you look different than somebody else.
And Michael, what is the process like of developing these ideas? Because I'm thinking of lots of people that I come into contact with. I'm thinking of people I read about. I'm thinking of myself. I'm thinking of my listeners first. And I know that there are several of them who are doing pretty much the same thing, offering similar things. Nothing wrong with that. That's obviously to be expected. But so how do you do that? Is it just a matter of closeting yourself away or going on a retreat, or is it a matter of getting out there and listening to people, networking and seeing what other people are doing, how you can distinguish yourself? What are some of the ways that we can do that?
Well, you know, the answer is it's part of all of those things. I mean, if the people who are really good in the market, you know, have the strongest ideas. Now, the way they get those ideas is exactly what you just said. They're networking with people, they're out in the market, they're listening to clients, they're looking at what the competitors are offering, they're immensely curious about what's happening. They're taking their expertise from other parts of the world that are not necessarily just their industry or just their service, and then they're bringing those ideas to, you know, to new levels that will help their clients. So let me give you just a quick example. If you were to say for a prospective client, and I used this example a minute ago, and it's really just one, if your clients wanted to know what was going to happen in the next few years in their business, what could they expect? What would happen to their clients? What's going to happen to their supplier, your prospective clients' clients or customers? What's going to happen to your prospective clients' suppliers, or their retailers, or whoever? I mean, one of the most powerful ideas in the market is to figure out what you think is going to happen, you know, tomorrow or next year or in a few years, and begin to bring those ideas to the market. They're very compelling because people really want to know things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And once they've seen some of your ideas like that, and there's, you know, lots of other examples that you can use, then they'll start to look at what it is you do. And once they see that, you know, you have good ideas and you're competent and capable and you make, you know, credible claims to doing very good work, they'll, you know, send you an email or they'll call you. And so that's just one example. But, You know, and so the, you know, the question that you wanted, the part of the question is, do you closet yourself away? And, you know, the answer is eventually, yeah, you do. If you're going to be writing, for example, so that you can develop those ideas and get something pulled together that you can bring to the market.
So you really need to be, you really need to make sure that you're a thought leader. Otherwise, you're going to fall into the category of everybody else who's doing the same thing.
Well, you do, and you know I agree with that. And the I think calling them people thought leaders is a little bit of a misnomer, but it is a term that we all use. I you know like to call them idea merchants. That you're continually bringing fresh thinking to the market. And when you do that, people see it over time. And by the way, this is when you're marketing externally, you know, or marketing to people who don't already know you, it takes time. And it takes consistency and patience. And you've got to keep pushing your ideas into the market so that you ultimately get on somebody's radar who doesn't already know you, and it just takes time. And it takes sort of a constant stream of ideas, pushing them into the market, and eventually they take hold and people will start to, you know, you'll draw people to you.
This is so good. You call it an idea merchant. I like that. So what you're saying in a sense is that you have to be able to sell your ideas pretty much for free in advance before you sell the services that follow along with
you. You always sell your ideas before your services, that especially to people who don't already know you. I mean, if people who already, you know, if they know you already, they know who you are, they know what you can do, and you can help them. But people who are new to you, you'll sell your ideas first, then you'll sell a service.
Good. That's excellent. And so that's where the time comes in, right? Because you have to be willing to do all of this idea merchandising before you can really see the returns come in the form of the consulting agreements and contracts that you can expect.
Absolutely, because, you know, I think, you know, if you or I or probably, you know, mostly anybody who's listening today, you know, before we hire somebody we don't know, mm-hmm. we want to learn something about them. And sometimes, you know, if you just read a website or a service description, it doesn't get it done for you. But if you find something really interesting and creative and compelling about their ideas, you're automatically attracted to them. And that's what, mm-hmm. you know, that's the difference between the people who are the most successful in the market and those who are, you know, still doing okay but not pushing to the level that they want.
Now, Michael, is this where new technologies and digital technologies come in?
Absolutely. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier. There are so many new ways for clients to find people, and there's so much more information today. And we all know all that, but the difference now is that it's not just that there's more information out there, but the clients are actually using it. And that's a difference. I mean, they are really, really using it. And there are so many other ways now for you to establish a presence in the market at, you know, relatively little or, and, you know, almost no cost except your time and energy and creativity that there's no excuse not to be really visible in the market by using whatever, you know, platforms you want to use. You know, and clearly include your website and whatever social media applications you want to use, whether you're in, you know, Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, whatever, you know, you just have a great opportunity to create a consistent view of your ideas and your business in the marketplace today that there's no excuse not to.
I like that. There's no excuse for being invisible. So whenever we're dealing, a lot of times that's what customers tell us, right? As consultants, they say, okay, I know my business. I know how to do what I say I do, but nobody's finding me, or I'm not getting the sales that I think I want. So tell me this, Michael, as professional service consultants and the people that are listening, when they hear that, when my listeners hear that, you know, I'm coming to you because I want to make more money. I mean, that's not enough. It's our job to delve down below that and find out what that means for this person, right?
Absolutely, you know, absolutely, because one of the jobs of the consultant, particularly when you're facing the question that you just asked is, you know, what is, you know, what's really driving that? I mean, as a consultant or, you know, our service provider, you may know exactly what it is that you've done. You have a bunch of skills about bringing your own business to market because potentially that's what you've done before you or, you know, as part of your consulting practice. But what you really have to be able to figure out is how do you know what the issue is or the problem that your client really has? So if they say, you know, I just want to make more money or I want to be more visible or I want more customers.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. And that may be the extent to which they describe the problem. But your job as the service provider is to figure out, you know, first, why is that happening?
Right.
And then put together something that works for an answer to help them deal with it. And that's not always simple.
Right. Well, let me follow up on that then, because I think this will be critical. When someone does say, you know, I'm convinced that you can help me, I'm not getting the sales I want, I need you to help me figure out why and then tell me what to do about it. That's really two separate things, Michael. And what I find frequently is that sometimes people don't want to pay for the first one.
Well, and, you know, that's true. And you'll see that. And, you know, what happens as a result, and I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but what happens when as a result of that is you will find consultants out there who just have a service they offer, and, you know, no matter what the problem is, that's what you're going to get.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, you know, I forget the exact way this goes, but, you know, it's like if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail kind of thing.
Right, right.
And so, and that's a problem. So, you know, if you, and, you know, this may sound overly simplified, and I truly don't mean to do that, but if somebody comes to you with a problem and says, here's my problem, I think you can help, I don't really, and you say, well, how do you know that's your problem? And how do we know that if I apply my expertise in this way, that problem gets solved? And the client comes back to you and says, you know, I don't know that you're the expert, but I'm not going to pay you to go figure that out.
Right.
The simple answer is, then I can't help you.
Yeah.
Because the reason for that is that you're likely to get in trouble. Because more times than not, when a client says to you, here's my problem, it's not really the problem.
Right.
And there's usually something else going on there. And it's not because they've misdiagnosed it. They just sometimes don't look deeply enough. So if someone says, I don't want to pay for some kind of a diagnosis, chances, you're probably going to have a problem down the road, and it's best to just, you know, look in the other, you know, run away.
We're talking with Michael McLaughlin, author of Winning the Professional Services Sale. We've got to take one more break right now, Michael, and when we come back, we're going to ask you some more questions about delivering on the services that we promise to our customers. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. My guest today is Michael McLaughlin. He's the author of Winning the Professional Services Sale. And before we took our break, Michael was continuing to share some great tips for us about how to use technology to stand out in the marketplace and be what he calls an idea merchant. I really like that. So, Michael, let's talk some practicalities here. We've got people listening who have been selling products successfully for quite some time, as we said earlier, and they're getting queries from people who want them to help them be successful selling and sell products, selling the same sorts of products. Michael, can you comment on competing in an industry or providing a service to a customer that's also a competitor in another area?
Sure. You know, I mean, first of all, if somebody's if people, your competitors or others, are calling you and saying we really like what you've done and want to see if we can get something from your expertise and are willing to pay for it, congratulations. I mean, you clearly are doing something right. You're clearly quite visible in the market and generating demand. So you know, you should be very, very happy with where you are at. Making that transition, working in a services realm in addition to a product realm, is not going to be that difficult for you because you clearly know what to do. What will be difficult is to figure out how to actually deliver those services in a way that are both valuable to that potential client, but also, particularly if it's a competitor, but also while you maintain your own business and don't give away the store, so to speak.
But do clients expect, I mean, if they're willing to pay for it, do they have a right to expect the store? If you say that you can deliver the store, do they have a right to expect that you will pony up the secret sauce?
Well, I think they do in the context of the strategy or the business model that they're operating under.
Right, okay.
But that doesn't mean you need to give them your strategy or your idea, your long-range business plan,
right,
or how you're going to be successful in the market. So,
qualify that person in advance, right? I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to go back to what you said earlier, which is it's your job as the consultant to qualify that potential customer first, and you find it, if that's what they want, your secret sauce, and you're not willing to deliver it, then you can excuse yourself from that process before there's any damage done to anyone.
Well, and I think that you should. I mean, if somebody comes to you and says, I want a carbon copy of your business that,
right,
you know, in everything you've done, I mean, unless you want to do that, and I don't know why anybody would, especially if you want to continue in that business, or, you know, I mean, unless you're moving into like a franchise type of operation and you can somehow earn money from that, I can't imagine that you would want to do that. So, you know, all I'm saying is you want to give them the store, so to speak, in the context of what it is that the result they want to generate in the context of their business model, and not give away, you know, your long range plans as a business. And it's not a difficult thing to do, but,
mm-hmm,
but it is easy, I think, to bring all of that thinking forward about your own business to somebody else's, and you just want to be sure you stay within the context of what they're trying to accomplish and the result that they want to accomplish.
Yeah.
And for many, you know, that means helping clients establish new relationships that they don't have, which doesn't give away your store,
mm-hmm,
or establish new methods for getting into the market, which doesn't really give away your model. And so there are lots of ways to do that and be successful, both from a service, you know, from a services perspective, while maintaining your own business, the viability of your own business.
Michael, can you give us some tips on actually preparing a proposal once you have identified someone that you think is the perfect person that needs your help and that you can actually help? What are some of your tips for writing good proposals to share?
Well,
what you can do?
Yeah, you know, the sales proposal that we generate as consultants, probably, at least in my mind, the most abused and misused document that's ever been written. And people are really fast to write proposals for work that either they shouldn't be doing or they don't have a prayer of getting. And so I like to see people make sure they really understand what that client absolutely wants and needs, and there's some consensus that you're the right person or people to do it before you write the proposal. So in most cases, I suggest that people slow down before they write a proposal. I mean, some people believe that a proposal is kind of a milestone in the sales process because, you know, they believe if a client says, send me a proposal about that, that they have somehow advanced their cause. But many times they haven't. Many times it's just a sort of perfunctory thing that a client says. I like to see people really be sure they've got the lay of the land in terms of the result the client wants, the objective that they're trying to accomplish, the scope of the work, and, you know, how long it will last, and how much it's going to cost, and then write the proposal.
Right.
And so I just like to see people take a little bit more time before they write the proposal and use the proposal more as a document to confirm the work you're going to do rather than as a document that proposes the work you're going to do.
Confirm the work. And so, you know, this process, as you said earlier, takes some time, right? Because if we do it the way you suggest, the right way, we are not just writing a document saying, I can do this, and I can do this, and I can do this. We're saying, you asked for this. This is how I can deliver it to you, and this is kind of how much it'll cost. Is that kind of what you're doing?
It is. I mean, you're saying, you've asked for this. We have collaborated and come up with an idea that will allow you to accomplish that. We're going to, you know, we've agreed that we think it's going to take this amount of time for us to work together to do this, and here's what it will cost, and here's how I will do it. Rather than just saying, you know, here's what you said you wanted, I can do this, here's how I'll do it, here's what you'll get. You really want to, because when you do that and you just kind of write the proposal very quickly, you eventually have to go back to the client and work out a whole bunch of details
right. Before
you get started. And all I suggest is that people work out those details before they write the proposal.
So should they be separate from the service contract, or can they be one and the same?
I like to see them be one and the same.
Okay, good.
So that you're confirming the work. You're saying, here, you know, you're writing a document that says, here's your objective, here's the result you want, here's what we have, collaborated or collectively agreed on in terms of how to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the solution that we have developed together, and here's how long we think it will take, which would be the schedule, and here's the fee for us to work through this plan that we've put together here, and that's really all you need for a basic proposal.
Well, that's good. I just sort of jotted this down: objectives, solutions, timeframes, prices.
Yeah, and then if there are more than in many cases there could be more than one person working on it. So you might want to have a listing of the people, or a description of them, a resume, or just a summary of their qualifications if it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people, will, depending on the relationship you have with the client, will want to see something that describes your qualifications generally to do the work. Now, lots of times that's on people's websites and other places, but, some clients want to see that. It kind of depends on the nature of the work you're proposing to do and the relationship you have with the client.
That was very, very sort of useful way to think about it. And so on the front end, before, there's an in-between time, though, right? There's the time when you first meet a prospective client when you don't even know that they're a prospective client, right? You're networking or you're at an event, you meet someone, and at some point in the middle, you begin to identify them and they begin to identify you as possible business colleagues that can help each other. So that period of time, I would imagine, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, is probably one of the most important periods of time, right? Because tell us a little bit about we don't want to, be badgering people with a million emails,
Right.
Saying how fabulous we are. And at the same time, silence is not okay either. Give us some tips on how to, walk that line and perform delicately so that we can stay at the top of their mind without driving them nuts.
Yeah, you don't want to, the last thing you want to be is a pest.
Right.
And your prospective clients and buyers will resent that and will not call you if you're a pest. And you can always tell because they either stop responding or they don't call you back or whatever.
Right.
From the point in time that you meet somebody you sort of feel like you've clicked and there's potentially maybe it's a longer term relationship and there's maybe something that you can do to help that person later.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing that you can do is to find ways to engage with that individual in a valuable way. Not just calling them and saying to the person, do you want to have lunch or can and I talk to you about what's up. But find ways to stay in touch with that individual based on values. So if there are new ideas that you've published, or if there are, if there's new research on an issue that's important to them, mm-hmm. that you can pass along, if you can, offer, if you do, for some people do webcasts or seminars or whatever, if you can invite them to things, what you really want to do is establish, you want to establish some rapport, obviously, but the key to ultimately creating a relationship that results in a sale is to establish a relationship based on professional competence and value, because, we may be interested in we may hire our friends to do work, but if you have a friend who can do work, but you have somebody who's really, really competent, chances are you're going to hire that person. So you want to establish that relationship based on value and competence, and clearly rapport is important. But the way you do that is to just engage on issues and engage in the things that are important to that client, not just try and bug them and say, what's up?
So we're back to, are we not using the technological tools that are available to offer that engagement to them?
Absolutely, and you're using that platform or platforms to spread your ideas.
And that's
so
it all
comes back to that.
Yeah, and they've given you permission to include them on the list of people or the RSS feed or whatever it is that you're using to share that information.
Absolutely, and in some cases, in many cases, it's even something as simple as email.
Yeah.
So that, you just tell someone, I've just written about this, or I've just attached a research report I found that might be helpful for you, or, a study by a professor has done, whatever it is, but, if you're going to do that, and a lot of people will try this, but if you're going to do that, you have to just take it one step further. It's not enough just to say, I've written about this subject, you might be interested, and here's a link, or here's a PDF, or whatever, here's a blog post. But what you want to do is say, I'm writing, and I saw this, and I thought you might find this study or blog post or whatever it is interesting, because I know you're facing this issue, and this will help you because, fill in the blank.
Okay.
So you're really not just saying, I think you'll find this interesting. You're saying, I think you're gonna find this really interesting because I know you're facing this issue, and this is one way that people have addressed it.
And we absolutely should not be afraid, right, Michael, to share that exactly as you said, even if we had nothing to do with the creation of the information. If it's
you should
blogger, okay.
You should because one of the things that we know is that lots of clients and our prospective clients are dying for information that's really relevant. I mean, when we were talking earlier about there's so much out there that people have to sort through it. It's really nice if you're on the receiving end of something that's been filtered, that's valuable, and that's targeted at what you need from somebody you know and trust.
Right.
It's perfect. And there have been I can't tell you how many times it's happened to me and many others when somebody will call you and say, I got that report you sent and I thought it was good. I liked the reason you sent it, and I was it gave me a reason to call you. Because I wanted to ask you about X, Y, or Z.
Good.
And, some people are afraid about sending out other ideas, but there's really no reason to be afraid of it. You should embrace it and use all the best ideas you can find to help market your own practice, because it's helpful for you, and mostly it's helpful for your client.
Well, and certainly if they're looking hard enough, if a buyer's looking hard enough and doing their due diligence, they're going to come across other people's stuff as well. You might as well show them that you have their best interests at heart.
That is so true, because a lot of clients will evaluate a consultant or a professional service provider, whatever you want to call them, based on how they behave when there's no sale on the line.
Right. Good point. That's an excellent way to kind of wrap up, that buyers make decisions based on how you behave at least as much as what you can deliver to them. That's a great way to think about the relationships, Michael, that you said are so important. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time with Michael McLaughlin, author of Winning the Professional Services Sale. Michael, tell us, where do we go online to get more information about you and what you have to offer?
Well, there's a couple of places. First, my business's website is at mindshareconsulting.com. So that's mindshareconsulting.com. And they can learn about the things that I do and the books I've written and the articles and so forth that I've written. And there's a connection to my blog from there. But I also have, for the last 8 years, published a newsletter called Management Consulting News. And that you can find that at managementconsultingnews.com. And it's a free monthly newsletter that we feature every month, interviews and articles with, you know, really the leading thinkers out in the marketplace, and get their best ideas on what's happening in business, what's happening in government, healthcare, and so forth, and how it affects consultants. So that's free, and it's something that it's a resource that people, lots of people use and like, so if you want to take advantage of that, feel free, and that's at managementconsultingnews.com.
Great. Managementconsultingnews.com. That's wonderful, Michael, and if you want to follow him on Twitter, everyone, you can follow him at M.W. McLaughlin at Twitter. It's really great to have you on the show today, Michael. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you for the invitation.
Next week, everyone, November 23rd, Bruce Piasecki will be here. He's the author of The Surprising Solution, and he joins us to share why social responsiveness is the key to long-term profitability and sustained success in business. All those S's got me there. I look forward to seeing you then. Bruce is a great guest as well. Michael, you've been wonderful. I can't wait to see you guys again next week on November 23rd. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.